Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Sven Harmsen. Sven is the Director of External Ventures at Nova by Saint-Gobain. Sven, welcome to the podcast.
Christian, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be part of this podcast, and at the same time, my pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. So why don't we start with Nova? What's the fund's investment thesis?
Good question. So maybe I need to give you some background. Nova is the corporate venture arm of a French multinational company called Saint-Gobain, headquarters in Paris, what is typical for a French company, almost no other choice. Nova is working with startup companies. The parent company also was a startup company, but that's 360 years ago. We are one of the, I think, oldest companies. And the starting point for the company was glass. So we actually, our first project was the murals of Versailles, the castle of Versailles near Paris. That was our first project. So murals made from glass. We are still a glass company. That is the starting point. We differentiate between flat glass and curved glass. And I tell you what that means. Flat glass is a window and curved glass is automotive glass. Mm. And automotive includes airplanes, buses, trains, whatever. The company pivoted into a materials company. Based on the flat glass, the window glass, we became mainly a materials provider for the building and construction industry. So we have everything, tiles, roofing, siding, mortar, insulation material, gypsum drywall. And I'm focusing more now on what we have in North America, but in other parts of the world, there are even other products. And based on the other side, and that's why I started with the automotive glass as well, we are serving many other industries like the automotive industry with glass, but also with coating technologies. We have abrasive products. We have a lot of even life science products, which only few people know. Most of them are based on silicones, like silicone tubes you find in hospitals is a typical example. Nova actually is the corporate venture arm. We were founded in 2006, so quite a while ago. We suffered a little bit from the financial crisis in 2008-2009. After starting with some investments, we pivoted into a technology scouting unit for some time. We actually restarted to invest in around 2014-15. When I joined the company, we had about four portfolio companies, so not really a portfolio, just a few investments. Nowadays, we have 60 investments, roundabout. We invest typically very early. Seed, Series A is a sweet spot. We have flexibility. The key measure for us is that we are a very strategic investor, so we always need to find a fit with the parent company, always need to find somebody serving as a sponsor or champion, however you want to call him or her, somebody who likes the technology or likes the business model. We love to see partnerships between our portfolio companies and the parent company. But besides that, we are very agnostic, and it's way beyond the pure materials aspect. We have many investments more on the digital side. We have investments focusing on sustainability, on robotic technologies. So it's much broader than the pure materials, which makes nearly more than 90% of the product portfolio of the parent company. This, we are still a materials company, but we use the corporate venture arm to explore other fields that are beyond our typical core business.
And do you feel like that's been in the fund's DNA since day one, or did that evolve over time?
Well, you always see some changes, but in general, yes, that's in the DNA from the very beginning. It was always to bring additional new innovations to the company, build partnerships with these startup companies, with entrepreneurs who are passionate about their technologies. That was the idea from the very beginning.
I have a bunch of questions that I'm going to ask about Nova, but before I do, take a step back. I would love to know what your career progression looked like leading up to joining the fund.
Well, that's an interesting question. I started out as a chemist. I'm German chemist. That was my starting point. Trained more to synthesize new molecules, and I was really fascinated by that. I did this in the pharmaceutical space. I did a postdoc in the US, came back, did the same more in the agrochemical space. What brought me a bit closer to the VC world was partnerships. So I worked on many partnerships with companies in North America, with companies in Asia, spent some time in Japan. And then I joined for some time a startup company back in Germany, which was very fascinating. We might may go back to that one at some point. And I became new business development manager, part of marketing of a German chemical company, BASF. And I was already the contact for the corporate venture arm. And they asked me at some point if I want to, if I would be interested to open their East Coast office somewhere in the US, because back then we had a, I still say we, they had an office, of course, at the headquarters in Europe and one on the West Coast, San Francisco. Never had one on the East Coast. It's quite challenging to work 9 hours time difference from West Coast to Europe, Central Europe. So I opened an office in Boston and I'm still there. I'm here for 13 years now. Still like it. But joined Saint-Gobain about 6 years ago now in my current role, overseeing all our venturing activities in North, actually North and South America. I just added the newest team member who was based in São Paulo.
Okay. You mentioned your time as an operator for a startup in Germany. Love to hear about the experience and how it's influenced you as an investor today.
Yeah, that was actually the key point for me to become interested in venturing, investing. That company, it was a small biotech in the Munich area, working on immune diseases. I was heading the medicinal chemistry department, and in that role, I worked directly with our shareholders, with the board members, and I felt like it's fascinating to have those discussions, but it would be even more fascinating to sit on the other side of the table and listen to all those stories, listen to all those technologies, new business models, work with many people, learn about all those innovations. Well, it's not that simple, but still, this sparked my idea to become an investor at some point. From there, it took another 10 years. And I told you about that part. But eventually, I became an investor. Some people say I went to the dark side. I wouldn't call it that way, but I really love it. And I can say it's fun to work with entrepreneurs, it's fun to work with other investors. Because you always build something, you make so much experience. So that's why working at a startup company was a key part in my career that really sparked my interest to become an investor.
Wow. Okay. Well, it has been a theme on the podcast where we talk about investors who've spent time in the trenches as an operator, and that it's valuable because you now know what it's like to be on the other side. And so, okay, so let's come back then to Nova. So I'd love to unpack due diligence, but before I do, maybe it'd be helpful, for the benefit of our audience who are not don't have your background in material science. Any core themes that exist today, whether in the US or the world at large, around innovations that are
that are really having a big impact? Obviously, big parallel would be AI, but I don't know if there's anything in alloys, ceramics, glass, anything that's the big thing right now.
That's a very good question. I'm not sure if we have that one big thing, but I mean, AI is also not only this one big thing. It's a collection of many tools and things that you combine and reshuffle. And I think the same is true with materials. There's a lot of innovation going on, especially in the energy space, in the coating space. It's still, and we know this from the time of semiconductors, miniaturization is always a topic. Higher efficiency nowadays is actually more on sustainability and circular economy. You try to avoid mixing all kinds of materials, because if you use more pure materials, it's easier to either recycle them or to reuse them. That's certainly a big trend. And I mentioned energy. I mean, we all struggle to find enough sources for energy that is affordable. Maybe at some point we can use nuclear fusion technologies. That's still some time to go, but there I expect significant innovations. Well, and we are all aware of the healthcare industry. There's a lot of innovation over the last couple of decades, and I expect there will be more in the future decades. There are still so many diseases we cannot cure, so that is certainly a field, even though I'm currently outside of that field.
I totally agree. One of the things I think about is energy and demand has been a reoccurring theme on the podcast, particularly because of AI. But the topics that you don't necessarily hear people talking about per se is like, okay, well, what about a transmission, energy loss, and sending in from electricity from a source to its user. And you could imagine that there's just so much opportunity to see improvement. So with that, when you're looking at companies, what does due diligence look like inside of Nova?
Well, let me start here. I'm representing more a corporate venture arm, which is somewhat different to a financial VC. What is the major difference for us? The difference is, and I mentioned that before, we are a strategic investor. So we are very strategic in our fields. So the first filter is there a fit on the technology side or market side with what we do inside the company? So is there a link to our ceramics business, or is there a link to insulation materials? That is the first filter. If we say, yes, there could be a fit, we see a combination or an expansion of our products, yes, then we go for it. After that, it's pretty similar to what other investors would do. We spend significant time on IP. That's usually the major asset early stage startup companies have, looking into the details of the technology. And then, of course, team is always key. You want to understand the thought process of the founder of the company or the group of founders, whatever applies. And we look, of course, at business plan. We look at their customers or sometimes potential customers, at their current board, at other investors they are working with. I mean, basically the holistic story, and it depends on the stage of the company. Some of them are very early. It's like two people, one patent, no revenues. That's a very simple due diligence compared to a company that is 10 years old and has a bunch of patents and is in Series D.
So have you personally noticed any patterns over the years of profiles of companies that go on to be above average successful?
Yeah, that's always the tricky question. I'm not sure if there is the golden bullet answer for that question. But in general, you want to work with entrepreneurs who have some experience, are very passionate about what they are doing. At the same time, the entrepreneur needs to be open for advice, let's put it that way. Because they need to pivot usually a couple of times until they are where they want to be. That's certainly one key thing. You need diversity in the team. If you have like a family startup where husband and wife start a company, that can work, and we have an example for that, but it's rare. So it's usually more that you have a group of people with different backgrounds. One is coming more from the financial side. One is more, maybe has a consulting background, is coming from strategy. Another one has a strong technical background, and so on. I think this is a key pattern for successful startups. But it's also good that they have some, yeah, the typical word is a serial entrepreneur, somebody who did it before. And actually, sometimes it's better somebody is there who made the experience and was not successful because he knows exactly what he doesn't have to do again, rather than people who say, oh yeah, my startup was successful, I sold it for $1 billion. Because sometimes this is not because that entrepreneur is that strong. So sometimes you learn more from things that don't go well. But that's my personal opinion here.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said about probability and statistics, right? Some place being in the right place at the right time makes you think you're a genius. I'm curious. So, you know, obviously startup costs on a SaaS company are, for intents and purposes, de minimis. But when you start looking at infrastructure, hard tech, startup costs are materially higher. I'm curious because it doesn't come, you don't hear entrepreneurs, or at least I don't hear entrepreneurs as often talking about pursuing manufacturing, robotics, materials. But have you seen any trend in terms of some of the ways that founders in the pre-seed or seed stage can overcome capital requirements to get started?
First of all, I would agree with you. It's challenging for the companies in the material space to raise the capital they need, because usually it's more capex intense than software digital companies. They work more with loans. They work with venture debt more than I think digital companies do. They use contract manufacturer when it comes to their first pilot manufacturing batches, because you cannot build your own manufacturing facility if you don't even have a viable product. So you have to be very careful. You have to work with partners. Sometimes those partners are corporates like us. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those partners are service suppliers who offer such kind of thing. So there are ways, and I feel it makes it even more important for material startups to work closely with their partners, with their board, with their advisors to be successful, because they have this dip where they feel they have a product, but they don't know how to scale the product, where to find the capex. But there are ways.
So, I think that's great insight, because I don't know in the founders that I talk to that they necessarily appreciate that there's an opportunity to outsource components of production before you get to the point where you can self-fund. And so with that, let's say if you find a company you're really bullish, you'd like to make an investment, and you pair a manager inside the corporation, what does the collaboration look like?
Well, typically we start with a so-called joint development agreement, JDA, where we find common ground between our portfolio company and the parent company, identify a project. Sometimes we are the material supplier and they have a new application. Sometimes it's the other way around. Of course, sometimes we work on licensing deals. For those startup companies that are already more advanced, they have already a product, they want to expand their commercialization base geographically. I mean, as a global company, we are almost in all parts of the world, and we can help them there. But the technical partnership, JDA, material transfer, this is more the typical start to evaluate, is there common ground? How can we work together? Because the idea is not that, like, we give them money and we get the product back, or whatever you want to define it to. It really should be a benefit for both sides. I mean, we bring some know-how, which is usually more on the scale-up side, maybe IP strategy, maybe legal, maybe commercialization. But at the same time, of course, we want to benefit from the startup company because they are so agile. They work on many projects at the same time. They can really follow up on crazy ideas, where at a large corporation, it's a little more difficult to start something that is completely outside the box. And so in a way, a corporate venture unit like Nova, we try to combine the best of both worlds. That's why we are working also with incubators. I have a desk at an incubator in the Boston area to be very close to startups, to other investors, and other stakeholders in that ecosystem.
No, I mean, it makes great sense. It's this marriage of the speed and nimbleness that comes with being an early stage company compared with the balance sheet expertise that comes with being a, you know, nearly what, four century old corporation. Notwithstanding expertise and resources, anything else that you could share with us as to how Nova will support its portfolio companies after an investment's made?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, we always ask for board representation. It doesn't have to be the board director seat. That depends on the level of our investments. We always want to share the risk with other investors. But we stay close to our portfolio companies. I mean, on one hand, as I mentioned before, we always want to see a partnership. So that's one angle, which is usually handled more from our colleagues on the business side. But when it comes to the more financial strategic side, it's more the Nova team. We're working closely with the board, closely with the executive team of the portfolio companies. We help making introductions, sometimes to customer, especially to new investors, because as you know, every 12, 18, 24 months, they need to raise more money. The typical thing is that the startup feels like, oh, this is our last round. Usually they need another three rounds, if not more. And there they need a lot of support. It's especially these days, it's challenging to find fresh money, new investors for your company. And that's where we can help a lot.
I love it. So let's talk about outlook on two fronts. Let's just start with venture in general. You know, you referenced that the ability to raise capital is more challenging, arguably not as easy as it was a couple of years ago. Do you have a thesis on a longer term outlook of what's in store for venture in the years ahead?
Good question. I have a guess, certainly, but these days it's really challenging to have a good guess. Everything goes much faster, and also the changes come faster. I think the venture industry will come back. Right now, it is difficult for startups to raise money. That's also because of the market situation. We don't know if the economy really sees a downturn over the next 2-3 years. Over time, it will certainly come back. And for me, every downturn has its beauty, because the best companies will make it. And currently, and maybe that's a different aspect, currently we don't see that many grants. This is drying out. Again, this is an opportunity for investors. So the companies need more dilutive money, because there's not so much non-dilutive money in the market, and that is a great opportunity for investors. So we just have to make use of it.
So I agree. You know, and I see, you know, one of the things I see happening practically is a lot more VCs are starting to offer venture debt funds. Just because, and obviously I understand that Nova's in a different situation with a corporate as your 1LP, but I see that increasing demand for liquidity, yet, well, maybe the door is just open. We're recording this in mid-June 2025, and there may be a crack in the IPO market. But I agree. I mean, I think your assessment's spot on. But if I can come back, though, to materials, so my next outlook question is going to be, you can make a case that there's been a shift or an ongoing shift back to nearshoring manufacturing. To what extent has that factored into your decision-making process, or how where you're looking to invest?
Well, I mean, given that Saint-Gobain is a global company and we have like 800 manufacturing sites, we are not scared if we run into a company that needs manufacturing because that's our bread and butter. We do it on a daily basis and we have a lot of expertise on that. You just have to manage it properly. Again, you start small. Let's say that also applies for manufacturing. Usually you start with a partner. In some cases, we can help with the first batch of a product, maybe a few kilograms or whatever is needed. Usually it's more a third party. Usually it's more contract manufacturing partner to help out. There's a lot of expertise at our end to help our portfolio companies come up with a strategy how to scale their manufacturing and where to place the manufacturing. Should it be one for a big region? Should it be three or four? You cannot have a general rule there because it depends what kind of products you have. If you have something of super high value, like in pharmaceuticals, where you need only a few milligrams for one pill that you sell, and in contrast, we sell a bag of mortar. I mean, the bag of mortar you want to manufacture close to your customer, or gypsum drywalls, or shingles, and these things. If you only need very small quantities, you can have one production site in the world. Yeah, you should always have at least two, but I think you know where I'm heading. So there's no perfect answer. It really depends on the company. It depends on the product and what they want to commercialize.
No, that's a great point. Totally intuitive that shipping costs are going to be an input on what you sell something for. And obviously, the larger the quantities, the more it costs. Totally makes sense. Be price competitive. Sven, before we wrap up, I enjoy asking a retrospective question. And that is, if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, and you can pick the age. Any age you want. What would you share?
Well, maybe that's more specific to me as an investor, because if you are working with other investors, everyone has a different story. There's not this one career path of an investor. In my case, I came from the technical side, marketing, new business development, partnerships. So no, I know what I'm talking about there. Looking back, I should have spent more time to look into the details of finance and legal. I wouldn't have expected to spend that much time on legal matters as I do today. So it would be good to have more there. And in many cases, I learned it the hard way. Luckily, I always worked with very experienced lawyers, and they helped me understand all the details. But it's certainly something you should learn early on because you will spend a lot of time there. And the same is true for finance when you do the due diligence of the P&L and all the business plan details. That is certainly helpful.
Great to know. Last but not least, so anyone in your current network who's had a significant impression on you that you think our audience would benefit seeing on our podcast?
Wow. I think I have to think about that one. I probably come up with a couple of ideas spontaneously. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure who was already on your podcast, so I'm curious to see the list of 50, 60, 70. I don't know how many you have already. We are working a lot with other investors in the building and construction space. I'm sure there are a couple you would love to have on your podcast. Also energy space.
Well, we'll do this. If you'd like to give it some thought, happy to include it in the show notes.
Sure.
And we can make best efforts to see, we'll send them an invite and see if we can have them on.
Sure.
Really enjoyed this, really informative. And if there are any members of our audience that would like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
How can they find me? The easiest, LinkedIn. Just reach out to me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, happy to share my email address, sven.harmsen@saint-gobain.com. You will find me this way or the other. That's the best way. You find me physically, typically in the Boston area, if I'm not traveling. I'm based actually at our R&D center outside of Boston, and I have a desk in Boston as well. So that's another chance. You will find me.
Fantastic. Sven, thank you again. Really appreciate your time and sharing your insights with our audience.
Christian, it was a pleasure. I really enjoyed the podcast, and maybe a final advice to the audience, whoever wants to be an investor or is already an investor, be flexible, be open, listen to all those stories, and then make up your mind if it's worth to go the next step. But I appreciate it. Thank you, Christian.
That's great advice. And again, for the benefit of our audience, our pleasure, benefit for our audience, Sven Harmsen, Director of External Ventures at Nova by Saint-Gobain. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of Finstrat Management. This has been another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.